Rhea Chiles, the widow of former Governor Lawton Chiles, died last November, but she left behind a legacy of work aimed at improving the lives of children. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Carson Cooper. Rhea Chiles dedicated her life to improving the lives of children in Florida. That effort was carried out in part at the Lawton and Rhea Chiles Center for Healthy Mothers and Babies, which was founded 2 decades ago on the University of South Florida's Tampa campus. USF's College of Public Health recently held a symposium to honor the legacy of Rhea Chiles. On today's show, highlights of that discussion.
We call the memorial service to order. I'm Sam Bell, the chair of the College Public Health Advisory Board, which gives me the privilege of being the MC here today, and I want to welcome all of you to this important ceremony. Shortly after the death of Rhea Chiles, we here at the College Public Health and at the Lawton and Rhea Chiles Center said we want to have an event and we want to do something. But knowing the honoree, knowing Rhea, we know what an advocate she was. And we said it's not enough to have a memorial service. We need to be able to talk and advocate and talk about children's issues. So that's how we're planning to celebrate today. This is the people who spent their lives carrying out the mission that that Rhea and Lawton set in motion. And it's, I think, significant that we're here in a facility that stands for her advocacy for maternal and child health. And so we're fortunate today to all be here and celebrate this wonderful woman. Our next speaker really is the person that has put his mark on this in a meaningful way. Charlie Mahan had the good fortune of coming from West Virginia. There's so many good people that come from West Virginia, I being one, he being another. Charlie served in so many capacities in the state of Florida that it's hard to really know where to begin, but he was a leader in the state with the Department of Health back when the Department of Health really meant something. He came here as the dean of the College of Public Health and then also as the founding director of the Lawton and Rhea Chiles Center. He knows more about what's happened here than anyone else, and I don't know whether he'll tell it or not, but it's my pleasure to bring to you Dr. Charlie Mahan.
I have to get, as the oldest guy in the room, I have to get my glasses, my hearing aid, and the history will take about. My job right now is to talk about the history of the center. Certainly the idea of having this institution was to cement the lifelong interest Lawton and Rhea had in maternal and child health issues. We convinced them that they needed a center at a major Florida university because they had seen other governors have, like the Grahams, have a focus on elder care and so on, and then they left office and it all just disappeared. They didn't want that to happen, neither do we. And I always talk about them together because, believe me, there weren't, I think, many things Lawton did without the advice and consent of Rhea, and many of the things that happened were her idea originally. Since I was on loan when I finally became director of the State Health Department, I was on loan from the Gators to serve as state health officer. This center that we were talking about was supposed to be back in Gainesville because Lawton and Rhea both graduated from Florida. As we kept talking about this, they didn't know for sure whether they wanted their names on something at all, because Lawton says it's really dangerous to put the name of a living politician on a building. And Florida had had that experience many times before. One of the things happening in the 80s was the Healthy Mothers Baby, Healthy Babies Coalition, of a lot of uppity, pushy women from around the state and a lot of other health professionals who were just wonderful at bringing these ideas along and working with Senator Chiles. And I think that's one of the things after he resigned from the Senate and sat around for a couple of years, still working on MCH issues, that convinced him that he really ought to get back in the game, and the best way to do that would be governor. When President Castor convinced me to come to USF as the dean of the college, I went to President Lombardi, who was all excited about having the center on the Florida campus, and he was very gracious and said, well, if the Chiles are okay with it, that's fine with me. And so the other sales point was that this was the only college of public health in the state, and it made sense if we were dealing with issues that were mostly public health, the center sit here next to the college or as part of the college. And Lawton said, well, if we're going to have a center, it's got to be for the whole state. So we still, in concept, consider ourselves sitting here at USF and raging bulls, but we do realize we serve the whole state. Backing up a little bit to 1990, Lawton was elected governor. Lawton and Rhea sat us down and said, well, you know, in the last 10 years, we've gone from the bottom of the states in infant mortality. We've gone up about a third, but there's a lot more we can do. We came up with the Florida Healthy Start Law in 1991, the first year Lawton served as governor. At any rate, in 1991, the Healthy Start Law was passed, and what that involved was expansion of the Children's Medical Services clinics. Up until that time, high-risk women in the program had to, if they were lived in Fort Myers, they had to come to Tampa General to be seen. So clinics were established in Fort Myers and Naples, as an example. Risk screening of mothers and babies, that is, asking a bunch of questions to see what the chances are of them having a problem. That was the first time that was done by any state, and we still do it, and we're still the only state that does that, and it's been very helpful. Expansion of the Medicaid program to the maximum you could take it, and as I joke, being an obstetrician, we were having a lot of trouble getting people served because we had expanded prenatal care throughout the state. But a lot of private doctors were not anxious to see poor people. But with the expansion of Medicaid and paying more from $300 to $1,000, a lot of people had an epiphany and decided to serve the poor. The main mark that Rhea made on the Healthy Start Law was the idea of Healthy Start coalitions around the state. And her idea was that, you know, if local people don't have a buy-in to all these things we're trying to do, this will disappear even in spite of the center, just like other things. And so she came up with the idea of putting coalitions in every part of the state. That could be five rural counties. It could be one county like Hillsborough, one county like Pinellas. And having local people involved in deciding how about half the money that was non-discretionary was spent. And I had friends in public health around the country saying, coalitions never work. They're alive and thriving today. They have saved a lot of what we've tried to do in maternal and child health. And, you know, we wouldn't be in the position we are without them. And our infant mortality started at around 12.5. In 1980, that's when we were at the bottom of the country, and we're up around 6 now, so we've cut it in half. We still got a long ways to go. Some countries have 1 or 2 per thousand deaths. I think one of the things we're most proud of that still exists is the federal grant through President Bush's Healthy Start program, $2 million a year, to the center for Central Hillsborough Healthy Start. It was to help black infant mortality, which was very high in the East Hillsborough area. We were lucky to hire some wonderful people to run that out of the African-American community. And after about 5 years, we talked with Dean Peterson, And we said, you know, these people can do this themselves. They don't need the help of the university anymore or the Child Center. We will still continue to support them as much as we can, but let's turn them loose on the community. They now have their own new building over in Armenia. They've cut the black infant mortality rate in half, and that's a very hard thing to do. And they have made us very proud out in the community. They still are happy to take our students and our faculty to work with them, and that's been a great plus, and we're very proud of the work they've done. We hope that Rhea and Lawton are proud of what the center has done and will do, because I think if you just heard that litany of things that I talked about, that's the kind of stuff we talked about with them that we could do if we could just keep the momentum going from all the good things they started. Okay, so I'm the ghost of the center past. Now we'll get the ghosts of the present and the future. Thank you.
Along with a discussion of the history of the center was a look at what the center is doing for women's health. Dee Jeffers is a program director with the Lawton and Rhea Child Center for Healthy Mothers and Babies.
My assignment was to talk about women's health, and you might think, well, that's a little bit odd. We're all just about mothers and babies and thinking about babies. But really, when you think about it, babies don't get here all on their own. They really do need to have healthy mothers, which was always a part of what the mission of the center was going to be. But as we've studied the issue of infant mortality, beginning back with the National Commission to Prevent Infant Mortality, we soon learn that at the roots of this, we have to have healthy women in our nation. And I can go back as early as the partnership with Lawton and Rhea when they founded the commission. They had many reports that came out that talked about this and took the spotlight not just on the infant at birth and what you do to keep them healthy, but on how do you get a healthy baby with a healthy woman. They expanded our views about making sure that they could get into health care, particularly prenatal care, to make it affordable. There were places women could not pay to get in. There were no funded medical public programs that would help them get there. So they recommended that you expand care, but that you make it more accessible in that it was user-friendly, such as a report talking about one-stop shopping. So if a woman showed up, she could get all of her social services, referral for Medicaid, help with her children, whatever it is that was bringing her down at the time and increasing her risk for a poor outcome would be addressed. Also, they talked about providing an array of services. And I remember one of Rhea and Lawton's favorite programs was Resource Moms, taking women from the community, training them to be the ambassadors that would go into the home or wherever the woman wanted to meet and to give her the guidance and support she needed. These were all common sense things we might take for granted as healthcare providers or researchers, but for policymakers to make this public and advocate that we would put resources into it was huge. And then finally, another aspect that you'll see later in some of the programs we did at the Child Center was to engage the community, particularly the faith community. They had a report called Hold Out the Lifeline. So the very special role of community-based organizations, non-traditional providers. Many of these that you're going to see were reflected in some of our earlier programs. And Charlie already talked about Healthy Start, so I just want to focus a little bit. You know, up until then, we had put resources into children's medical services and making sure our vulnerable infants that were born early or low birth weight had excellent care, had also begun to expand prenatal care. Still wasn't enough. So in addition to expanding the prenatal care program, Healthy Start put the focus on the mother, making sure that they were screened, so every risk, and not just healthcare risk, mental health, depression, whether a woman's in a domestic violence situation, she didn't have the housing she needed. So those addressed through intensive home visits or community-based services. So that was a big turning point for us. And then again, Charlie talked about the community coalitions. They were big advocates of David Osborne's work, reinventing government and public partnerships. And then finally, another thing that Lawton and Rhea advocated for was the expansion of Title X, and I think Dr. Daly will talk a lot more about that. But great proponents of making sure women got the care that they needed so they could time pregnancies appropriately. And as we found out through our research, that if a woman would just delay a pregnancy by 2 years after a pregnancy, she would improve her chances of having a full-term healthy baby a great deal. So we want to thank the child so much for letting us have their name on this center, since we were very committed to adding Rhea's name to it, that it wouldn't just be the Lawton Center for Healthy Mothers and Babies, the Lawton Child Center, that Rhea was a strong proponent of it. And we did take some of the great ideas that Lawton and Rhea had come up with. In particular, we had, instead of resource moms, we introduced doulas to the community, and that has been a surviving component. They train women from the community, not going outside or bringing already trained professionals, but taking women from the neighborhoods where the women were experiencing the highest rates of infant mortality to go into the home, support the woman through her pregnancy, remain with her at childbirth, and afterwards. The other thing they did was to contract with community churches. So as we look at our research and our evaluation, we have the data now to show that these things have worked. They've had 17 peer-reviewed publications coming out of that project, and they've stayed very committed to remaining close to the university to do research and to be evaluated. And that's one of the few in the country of about 90 programs. So we hope that you're as proud as we are of some of the things that we have accomplished. I appreciate being some small part of it. But more than anything, we are excited about the future of our new partners, and we feel like it's really in the hands of very good leadership. Thank you, Bill Sappenfield. People like Ellen Daly, who will take us into the future, and we look forward to seeing what you are going to bring.
Coming up,
we're now trying to better understand why these programs reduce infant mortality.
More from a recent tribute to the late Rhea Childs. I'm Carson Cooper. This is Florida Matters. I'm Carson Cooper. This is Florida Matters. Rhea Childs dedicated her life to improving the lives of children in Florida. The late Florida Governor Lawton Childs' widow died last November at the age of 84. Now more highlights from a recent symposium at the University of South Florida to honor her legacy. We go now to Dr. Ellen Daly.
I wasn't going to tell this story, but I had to, just because I'm so honored to be up here with this group. When my son was about 3 years old, he and I were we were out in the front yard raking some leaves, and Charlie came by on his bike. Charlie used to live in my we used to live in the same neighborhood, and it was kind of late autumn, and he had a cardigan on, and he was just sort of rolling around the neighborhood. And so he came up, and we were chatting, and I said to Patrick, "This is my boss, Charlie." And, you know, Patrick's sort of staring up, and Charlie's talking to him the way he would normally, and rode away and said goodbye to us. And Patrick said to me, "You must have the best job in the whole world." And I said, "Why is that?" And he said, "Because your boss is Mr. Rogers." And I do have the best job in the whole world. And I mean that sincerely, because I get to work with the people that have been up here already and are about to come up here and tell you what the Child Center is doing, what the history's been, what the future's going to be. One of the things I appreciate so much is the leadership here of the university and the college and the Child Center, and our opportunity to work in groups, which is one of the things that people sort of take for granted, and you really can't. So one of the strongest things about the women's health agenda here is that we work in interdisciplinary groups here very successfully, working on a lot of innovative programs. And the nice thing about working in the Child Center is that it's so connected to the college, the university, the community, the rest of the state, things that happen here in terms of putting women's health agenda forward also puts the health of women and children and families forward. We do a lot of work with reproductive health here. We have done policy analyses on Title X, which is a family planning legislation that is always under attack. Title X funding provides not just family planning services for women, but primary and preventive care. For a lot of women, that's their only health care. We do a lot of work to support Title X funding, and we'll continue to do that. We're doing research on long-acting reversible contraception, or LARC, which is a huge step forward in terms of family planning and reproductive options for men and for women. We take a health literacy approach here, and one of the reasons we do that is because in a center such as this, oftentimes what we do is make things more complicated than they need to because we're in academia. So we need to stop that. So if you take a health literacy approach, we make the complex plain, and we make it understandable and comprehensible. And so one of the areas that we're really excited about is looking at those recent, really confusing changes in guidelines in mammograms and in pap smears. And what does that mean? That actually changes the health of women. If they don't understand what those guidelines mean, if it changes their patterns, and so that's the kind of approach that we're taking. We do those sorts of things through NIH funding, CDC funding, HRSA funding. We get foundation funding. Sometimes we just do the research because it's got to be done, and we say, let's just do this and get the data and start this process. We can do that here in this kind of setting because this is public health. This is what we do here. But we do it because of the kind of leadership that we have.
Our next topic will be a perinatal health agenda. I do want to say a few words about Dr. Bill Sappenfield, who will be the other presenter. He's the chair of the Department of Community and Family Health at the college and directs the Lawton and Rhea Childs Center.
When we talk about the future, we're really going to be building on the success. So I call it back to the future. ReachUp is really one of the great initiatives that was blossomed out of the Child Center. And now the continuing work that they're going to do, they've now been identified as a level 3 federal Healthy Start project. There's now three levels. The 3 is the top. That means they are the excellent group. They're the group who provide technical assistance to other centers to learn what to do. So it's a high accolade. But they also have special roles now that we're now trying to better understand why these programs reduce infant mortality. I call it the black box. We sort of do these things, and infant mortality doesn't happen. And so they're now trying to look at intermediate outcomes so we can better define what is working, why is it working, and that's going to be important research. What I also like is one of my European colleagues said, only in the United States do we think we could ever cure 20 years of ill life in 9 months of pregnancy and have a good birth outcome. Nobody else would ever think of that. And so the new approach that ReachUp has been taking through an NIH grant is a community-based approach to try and understand what are some of the ongoing issues that the community needs to address to make it a better, healthier community and therefore have healthier babies and mothers. And so they spent through a process. They've identified physical activity and obesity, which in the African-American community has been greatly increasing and is causing tremendous impact on the health of both mothers and babies. And so they're now using that community process. So when we talk about what we need to work on, how we need to work on it, it's not something that's going to be artificially taken outside of the community and applied, but it's going to be trying to take the research into the community to build the type of programs the community needs to meet their needs. But we now can work on early elective delivery. This is basically delivering a baby earlier than medically indicated. There's not really a reason, but we used to take babies early, and you say, well, why would you do that? That's a good question. Why would you do that? Every week matters, but we can tell from all those babies who were early term that probably in Florida we were probably deciding to take about 30 to 35% of our babies too early. And given that every week affects mortality, affects the likelihood to be in NICU on a respirator, and we now even know learning disabilities, why would you do it electively? And if it was a repeat section, It was more likely closer to about 48%. They were just scheduling them early so we can get them before they were in labor, though being in labor is not necessarily a problem. And so the good news of that is after multiple years together, the latest CMS data that Linda Detman helps us pull off of the unfriendly federal website basically shows the elective delivery rate for the state of Florida now is down to 3%. We're now down to only about 18% of hospitals having rates greater than 10, so that we really had a huge impact in making a difference. We worked on a golden hour initiative trying to improve the neonatal resuscitation, and the biggest thing that was happening was babies shouldn't get called, but we were putting the delivery rooms down called so the doctors could be comfortable in all their gowns when they're delivering the babies, but the babies were getting cold. We actually were able to get them to increase their temperatures and by actually having physician changes. So this is really fun stuff. And we know it's not stopping. When we start into hypertension, that's one of the leading causes of pregnancy-related deaths, along with hemorrhage. We just started the initiative. We just did the assessment. We know that treating blood pressure in a pregnant woman within an hour is really essential in reducing her risk of mortality. And we already know from the 33 hospitals in the state that over half of the women are not having their blood pressures treated within an hour. So we're moving on to our next opportunity. And the whole night is behind this is these are practice patterns we know by research should happen, but sometimes they don't happen. The estimate is for years, and the quality improvement is to try and move that. And the future is going to be is we're going to be moving into measurements so that we can better assess not only what care you're getting, but what is the quality of care, and so that we can work and identify strategic places where we need to improve practice. And we're also going to try and move on health policies. For example, one of the recommendations we put forward to the state with the new managed care plans, and we're fingers are crossed, that they will actually require hospitals who participate to be doing at least one multi-hospital quality improvement initiative to actually improve their quality of care. So we're trying to make those policy changes. So what I'm trying to say is the Child Center is really excited about its history. We've had a tremendous start, but we're looking forward to the next 20 years for what we can do for moms and babies as we move forward.
And that's it for today's show. On an upcoming show, we're going to take a look at the Florida primary, and we would love for you to weigh in with your thoughts on the candidates. We have details at WUSFnews.org. Just click on the Florida Matters link. Florida Matters is produced by Lottie Watts and is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.